Okay, folks, so this is now, this is not going to be a public comment. Sorry, it took us a bit longer, but we had a, you know, lengthy item that we had to go over. So sorry for our tardiness, but, you know, we had quite a bit to discuss in closed sessions. So I do have 10 speaker cards for Citizens for Just Water, and with an order of speakers, 3 minutes each. So in order to have a good seamless process, I have an order requested, and I would like to have at least two or three of you on standby. That way we save time from, you know, sitting down and waiting for the next person. So I have you folks, and then I do have two other speaker cards also for public comment. So I will start with Kathy Biala, please. Thank you.
And Chair Wolf, this is Stephanie Yu. I just want to note for the record that currently two board members are not on the dais right now, and those are Jeffrey Young and Bruce Delgado. Moreover, we anticipate that there might be some discussion of an issue that Member Delgado may be recused from, so in an abundance of caution, he's stepped down from the dais.
Okay, all right. Hence the empty seat.
My name is Kathy Biala, a resident of Marina. The CalAm Desal project obtained an EIR approval despite the fatal flaws of a project with absolutely no current groundwater rights, and one that will harm Marina's sole source of potable water and commit its own peninsula ratepayers to a continued future of untenable water rates. How is this possible? The CPUC failed to hear the fundamental issues of water rights, best science, economic feasibility, and environmental justice issues. Each permitting or leasing body, however, can ask four simple questions. One, does CalAm hold any current valid groundwater rights? Two, using best science verification, does this take of water from Marina cause harm to the Salinas Valley groundwater basin? Three, are there any affordable, sustainable, regional alternatives to this project? And four, are mandates for environmental justice and human rights to water issues violated? The CPUC says it doesn't determine water rights, yet they proceeded without verifying any water rights. Please simply ask CalAm to produce a document showing allocated groundwater rights to our basin, and a clearly superior and already completed AEM 3D imaging was not allowed as evidence. Instead, a grossly inadequate methodology was accepted that claimed no harm to a neighboring community's sole source of water. Please simply ask Marina Coast Water District to show you the 2017 Stanford University AEM study. The CPU requested Monterey One Water to research an alternative expansion of recycled water, but then on September 13th, they refused to consider this report and approve the CPCN regardless. Please simply ask to read the Pure Water Monterey expansion document. Not one word of Marina's or MCWD's water demands were ever documented in the final EIR because we are not in the same jurisdiction as CalAm, and therefore CalAm was not required to address our needs, but we are the area in which the water will be illegally extracted. Marina was blatantly overlooked. Please simply go to the FEI chapter on water demand assessments to verify this incredible omission. Please ask not CalAm, but others, these four simple questions before making any decisions related to the CalAm Desal project. Those in the audience who agree, please raise your hands. And please submit all our comments today into the public record. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Julie Hoffman, and then Michael Baer.
Julie Hoffman, resident of Marina. CalAm has claimed that the State Water Resources Board had concluded that CalAm's project was fully compliant with water rights laws. This was stated as fact in the final environmental impact report, and has been misrepresented to the public as well. The State Water Board reissued a much more nuanced letter in September 4th to John Edward Forsyth, the senior environmental planner of the CPUC. I quote, "In order for CalAmp to possess appropriative rights to the brackish water under a developed water legal basis, whereby the project essentially creates a new water source, CalAmp would need to be able to demonstrate that its extraction and beneficial use of the water source would not injure or harm another legal user of water. Appropriative rights could be compared to a neighbor building a house in your backyard with no rights, but the neighbor would then have rights as soon as they moved in. This project is big and costly, and this cannot be right to hang approvals on such nonsensical reasoning." To paraphrase the rest of the letter, there is no permit for appropriative groundwater rights. The project would have to establish that the project water source is surplus to the needs of the groundwater users in the Salinas Valley groundwater basin. There is no surplus water. Monterey County is so concerned about seawater intrusion that in June of this year, an urgency ordinance was enacted prohibiting new wells in the basin. Water stakeholders and agencies are actively planning for regional compliance to the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. Yet CalAmp's project is outside of its jurisdiction in the Salinas Valley groundwater and has no accountabilities under this new law. By claiming that the state approved groundwater rights, the CalAmp slant well project was approved without determining rights or any conflicts with the SGMA mandates. Clarification of water rights by the state can only determine that this project infringes on the rights and responsibility of the public water system of Marina. All those who agree, raise your hand. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment, Mr. Burr. And after that, Tina Walsh. Thank you.
Thank you. Since April of 2015, when CalAmp...
State your name, please.
Oh, my name is Michael Baer. I'm a resident of the Monterey Peninsula. Since April of 2015, when CalAmp's first draft EIR for its desal plant became public, myself and several colleagues have been scrutinizing the science, and it quickly became apparent that the science was junk. What I mean by junk is that there is a preconceived outcome, which is that the project works while causing no substantial harm, period, regardless of fact, regardless of data, or contrary opinion. Let me give a couple of examples. They created a in the EIR, they created a complicated theoretical construct called a capture zone, where seawater magically intrudes right to the intake valves, but spreads no further. But does such a thing exist in nature? They do not answer that question. They even created a fourth water. There's seawater, there's fresh water, there's brackish water, and there's capture zone water. When the data at the monitoring wells for the test slant well showed rising salinity, they claim that it's due to the seasonal activities of the farmers, but they present no evidence to support it, yet it satisfies the California Coastal Commission to continue with the test slant well permit. When Marina Coast presents reporting of the aerial electromagnetic reports, the AEM, which was talked about earlier, which is an evolutionary leap as a means of understanding aquifer water chemistry, the work is summarily ignored by the Public Utilities Commission. These are just some of the dozens of examples of junk science in this process. If basic scientific literacy is defined as a fundamental solid grounding in scientific inquiry principles, then anyone with basic scientific literacy can see the junk science employed by CalAmp in its 3.5-year EIR process. I implore you to rigorously scrutinize the science that the PUC has certified as legitimate. They are a rate-setting agency, after all, ill-prepared to determine the validity of their own EIR. The chance of catastrophic damage through seawater intrusion into coastal aquifers, which is Marina's sole source of potable water, are real and pose an existential threat. They must not be left vulnerable to the PUC's ignorance of what constitutes real scientific inquiry. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Tina Walsh, and then Therese Collier.
Hello, my name is Tina Walsh. I'm a resident of Marina. The 2015 State Water Resources Control Board mission statement says, to preserve, enhance, and restore the quality of California's water resources and drinking water for the protection of the environment, public health, and all beneficial uses, and to ensure proper water resource allocation and efficient use for the benefit of present and future generations. A desalination project that pumps groundwater in an already critically overdrafted basin identified by the State Water Board cannot be permitted nor considered a new water source. Marina Coast Water District, which is responsible for our groundwater, currently has plans for many alternative water sources, including recycled water with aquifer replenishment, aquifer storage and recovery, and winter runoff capture, as well as considerations for a regional collaborative desalination option. The CalAmp project sets a terrible precedent by allowing a for-profit water company to interfere with another water agency's sustainability plans. The novel use of appropriative water rights would allow a community's water to be sold to the highest bidder by a narrow definition of beneficial use. The current proposed plan has been shown to be harmful to our sole source of potable water, and that the best beneficial use of our brackish groundwater is the barrier that prevents further saltwater intrusion. CalAmp has no accountabilities in the Salinas Valley groundwater basin to responsibly pump or protect the water resources now or into the future. The community of Marina opposes this unjustified project. Additionally, the 23,575 Peninsula voters recently made a clear statement that they no longer trust CalAmp for their future water supplies and water rates. The CalAmp project will not preserve, enhance, or restore the quality of drinking water resources. It cannot provide fair and equitable resource allocation for the benefit of present and future generations. Please hear the strong voices of the public that compel transparency, local control, and decision-making for all water uses in the region. For all those in the audience who agree, please raise your hands. And thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you. And next, Reese Colliver, then Melody Chrislock, please.
Hello, my name is Therese Colliver. I'm a resident of East Garrison on the former Fort Ord and a customer of the Marina Coast Water District. The California Human Right to Water Law declares every human being has the right to safe, clean, affordable, and accessible water adequate for human consumption, cooking, and sanitary purposes. CalAmp would say that illegally extracting water from a neighboring jurisdiction that happens to also be a disadvantaged community is justified to provide water to the wealthier Monterey Peninsula ratepayers. These are the same ratepayers who just overwhelmingly voted for Measure J to have more local control over their high water bills under CalAmp. These are the same ratepayers who do not want to spend millions more for the cost of producing extremely expensive desalinated water when viable and sustainable recycled water projects are available. These are the same ratepayers who bore the brunt of no new water sources being developed by CalAmp in 20 years, but paid for all of its failed projects. And what about the right to clean, safe, affordable, and accessible water for Marina and Marina Coast Water District customers? With the dismal environmental track record of CalAmp, how could Marina be subjected to CalAmp's project that has no water rights and does not generate any water for Marina and is poised to harm the Salinas Valley groundwater basin? Where are Marina and the Ord community's human rights to water and the right to protect our sole source of drinking water? The voices of both the Peninsula ratepayers and residents of Marina and the Ord communities need to be heard over the self-interest of CalAmp. Marina has been disproportionately burdened over time with industrial facilities on our coastal and inland areas. Disadvantaged communities have community values equal to any other community. Because we have limited financial resources, are not politically well connected, and are unable to speak with the same strength as well-endowed corporations and their allies, does not mean that the same values of access to clean, affordable water, preserving our pristine and sensitive habitats, having beautiful beaches as affordable recreation, along with promotion of our own economic welfare, should be secondary to a for-profit private corporation who wishes to exploit us. Isn't this why environmental justice concepts exist? Because for too long, this has been the predictable story. Please realize that if this story is to change, environmental justice policies must be given strength and credibility. All those agree, please raise your hands. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Next is Melody Crislock and then Brian Carfee.
Melody Crislock, I'm a resident of the Monterey Peninsula, and I'm speaking on behalf of over 22,000 voters who've had enough. I want to bring your attention to the problems we're facing with Cal-Am on the Monterey Peninsula. For decades, Cal-Am has been overdrafting our water resources, creating the water shortage we now face. Their solution is an expensive and oversized desal plant. Cal-Am has already given us the most expensive water in the country, and with many residents paying hundreds of dollars a month for water. My water bills personally, over the summer, $500 to $600 a month for water. The huge expense of this desal plant added to what we pay would be impossible. There are less costly solutions available to us to solve our water shortage, but the problem is they are not as profitable to Cal-Am. Another major issue with Cal-Am's desal is that it will draw its source water not from the ocean, but from marinas' brackish groundwater, to which Cal-Am has no water rights and cannot acquire water rights. Marina's residents oppose this project and have taken legal action to stop it. Cal-Am ratepayers, who would have to pay for this desal plant and the costly water it would produce, have had no say in this. Public Water Now, a local citizens group of 3,500 residents, put Measure J on the November ballot. Cal-Am spent $3 million to defeat it, but voters passed it by a 12% margin. This measure now legally requires our water management district to proceed with a buyout of Cal-Am if feasible. Our community wants to assume local control of our water resources and be rid of Cal-Am. Within 9 months, the peninsula will be able to prove that a buyout of Cal-Am is feasible and move forward with it. Under public ownership, we could develop more affordable, sustainable regional water projects, including the expansion of recycled water projects that could solve our water shortage for years to come. This would give us time to explore a publicly owned regional desal at Moss Landing, which is currently in the approval process. But Cal-Am will want you to believe that they must build this desal plant now, or the Monterey Peninsula will be without water. Absolutely not true. Those who agree with this, please raise your hands.
Thank you. Mr. Brian McCarthy, then Elizabeth Vischer. Thank you.
Yes, Chair Wolf, members of the board, my name is Brian McCarthy. I am a resident of Marina. One of the ways in which disadvantaged communities become subject to environmental justice or injustice is when conflict of interest issues are embedded into the decision-making process. Financial interests must be detected and disclosed, especially when projects are complex and entail millions of dollars. We have seen conflict of interest issues being unaddressed and excused with some hollow claims that people promise to act fairly in the face of potentially huge profits. Who will take the responsibility to stop such irresponsible acceptance of built-in biases? Who will question the documents and studies in which the input from those with conflict of interest continue to participate in the key approval process? Cal-Am's test slant well data was analyzed by 4 hydrogeologists, 2 of who are paid by Cal-Am, and 2 who represent special interests. One person paid by Cal-Am is Dennis William, who holds patents to the experimental slant well technology and was earlier implicated in a significant conflict of interest in the CPUC process. Yet the CPUC allowed Dennis Williams to remain on the hydrogeologic working group to analyze the test slant well data. That despite challenges by citizens and agencies alike. The approved final EIR is based upon this working group's findings that claimed no harm will occur to the Salinas Valley groundwater basin. with questionable and real scientific bias unchallenged, how does this unbelievable conflict of interest continue to be ignored? Could this be the stuff of backroom negotiations and deals among the power brokers that the public cannot trace or investigate? How do we restore the public's faith that the process is transparent and honest and fair to all? When such issues are present, environmental justice becomes meaningless. The solution is to ask the disadvantaged and impacted communities directly if they have such concerns, and not to simply accept the word of those who might be involved in a conflict of interest. Agencies with a decision-making authority must reach out to those opposing an applicant and not just give them a 3-minute public comment. We cannot possibly explain all that needs to be said in this format. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be here to speak before you, but I'd also really like to invite the board to think about what it means for some of us to take off of work and come here to speak for 3 minutes over a 3-hour commute one way for something that a lot of us feels very selfless, quite frankly. I'd like all those in the audience that agree with me to raise their hand. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. And next, Elizabeth Fisher, and then Audra Walton afterward.
Good afternoon. My name is Lisbeth Fisher, resident of Marina. One of the key issues is that corporate project proponents usually have a huge financial advantage over disadvantaged communities. This disparity translates into enormous financial capabilities to produce TV ads and mass mailing brochures, using full-time employees to develop and enact strategies, lobbying special interest groups to advocate for them, sponsoring civic projects to garner political support, being undaunted by expensive legal battles, filing small legal challenges to individual citizens or groups to distract or scare them, giving generous direct or indirect campaign contributions. This is what we have experienced. Here is what money can buy. Just show you a few examples. Elephant in the room. Don't get outfoxed. Photo of George Riley in here. And this one, in the weeds. Okay, my arms are not long enough. And I won't do the rest, but you've seen this stack that I'm holding up here. So this is what money can buy. These are just some recent samples of what CalAmp's $3 million brought against Measure J. These mass mailings came practically every other day to CalAmp ratepayers. There was even an attempt to block the petitions for Measure J by sending out thousands of mailers with a return letter to rescind signatures, ultimately paid for by the very ratepayers supporting the petition. Seeing this, we in Marina are concerned about the financial capabilities of CalAmp to lobby against us. By contrast, project opposers, maybe citizen groups or small cities whose leadership is primarily volunteer-based, who have extremely limited budgets or no money at all, in the case of citizen groups. The small jurisdiction of Marina must fight legal challenges not of their own making and at great financial sacrifice to pay legal fees that could otherwise have been spent on road repairs, civic projects, a new fire truck, or one more shift of police officers. But we are fighting an existential threat to our water supply, and we are being forced to protect our water. This is environmental injustice at play. All those in the audience who agree, please raise your hands. And thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comment. And next, Audra Walton, and then George Riley. Afterwards.
Thank you. My name is Audra Walton, a resident of Marina. Disadvantaged communities pretty much distrust governmental processes and feel unable to make an impact on decisions that may already have been determined long before we get our 3 minutes of public comment. This is a common experience. The deck appears to be already stacked against us in most situations. We have 2 to 3 minutes to relay concerns on huge projects, complex issues, and often with great personal discomfort in speaking before commissions or boards. We are deterred from talking to commissioners and board members because of concerns of ex parte communication. Yet project affiliates and applicant staff are free to and do speak multiple times as long as these contacts are merely disclosed to having been taken place. Meanwhile, the engagement process for project proponents has often been long-term and extensive over multiple contacts, while average citizens remain unaware of this. Residents of disadvantaged communities cannot track all the moving parts to the complex governmental process and cannot afford to appear before a commission for every issue. We may work full-time at low-paying jobs, have obligations for childcare or elder care, or have financial and or time constraints and just feel that there's no real point to showing up. When will public agencies and their constituents be able to engage with staff or board members prior to their minds being made up with the same access that project applicants and their powerful allies have? This is the critical challenge that must be addressed if an environmental justice policy can be truly relevant and fair. We are aware that our 10 speakers here today may be perceived as impeding the regular agenda, but we ask that you accept our comments and our presence here as a genuine and huge effort on the part of average citizens to communicate our grave concerns about our water in the only way that we have available. All those in the audience who agree, raise your hands. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. George Rowley, next.
How are you doing? Thank you. I sent a letter to this board under the date July 12th. I sent it to the executive director, Mr. Robertson. I don't know if you saw that, but I will probably make more copies of it. I didn't bring it today. But I want you to know that the recent vote on Measure J is only one example of the community sentiment about Cal-Am. It is no longer welcome by a large number of our people. But this didn't come about just overnight. This came about because of a series of actions that Cal-Am has performed, and we all know those: failed projects, overpriced projects. We pay the stranded costs. If you were to ask the mayors of our community 4 years ago, do you support Cal-Am's project? We have six mayors. All six would have said yes. If you were to ask them today, not a single mayor would say yes. That's how much things have changed just in the past few years. And it's largely because Cal-Am's performance is miserable. Miserable. And hopefully you don't just give them a buy or give them a grease track on getting decisions made on their behalf. Hopefully you'll see, let me just remind you, the Ocean Plan Amendment requires that slant wells be tried if feasible. The question, if feasible, has never been presented as a question. Cal-Am sits in the position of making that decision. They've written it down in a number of places, and it's in documents with the PUC. But that's a question. And the implementing agent for that question is your board. It's specified in the regulations issued under the Ocean Amendment that the Regional Water Board shall conduct a certain section analysis of all new and expanded desal facilities, which include slant wells. My comments are focused on slant wells. It's a feasibility study. You should not give Cal-Am a pass. This is what the problem is right now. We're a guinea pig for a state mandate that has no state money behind it, none. We're the first one to ever try this. Cal-Am has never done it before. No place in California, no place in the world has ever tried slant wells before, and I've tried them, but never in an operational sense. And the feasibility question has never been seriously asked. And I want to run through a number of factors that I hope you can ask, because you're in a position to ask those questions. And Cal-Am will be before your board soon enough. There's no operational slant well anywhere in the world. Their planned slant of the slant wells is more and more and more toward horizontal, which has never been tried before in the past. I can't believe this.
I know you came from the distance, so I'll let you I will speed through this.
I really will. But there are some questions about the conflict of interest that raises questions of credibility that have not been seriously asked. The information that's been available through a Stanford study has never been applied. The intended location of the screens, the intake process for the water itself was planned to be under the ocean. It is now inland. CalAM made an engineering decision to make that happen. Why? We don't know the reasons. But the fact that the location of the screens are inland brings into play all the water rights questions that exist in California, all of them. 100 years worth of litigation and case law. And the water rights, in order to get it, and if you read the State Water Board letter to the PUC, and I don't know if you've seen them, but you should look at them, it says they have a path for water rights. Not a right, but a path to water rights. That path requires investment in the slant wells, investment in the transmission lines, investment in the desal, and 5 years of operation before they can then prove that there's no harm. Well, it's too late. We got a white elephant. We've got millions and millions and millions of dollars on the ratepayers in order to find out if they have water rights. That is absolutely opposite of everything that any large investment project should consider, the decision makers on election projects. I want to ask that you just do four questions when you get a chance for CalAM. It's the only standard we think should make sense. And there are only four questions. Is it technologically feasible? And you should go down the list of all those technological questions. Is it cost effective? Because you know you can build a building about a mile high, but who in the hell would? And why would you want to? And is it valuable for it? Is it cost effective? Are the risks properly accounted for and assigned? Who's carrying the risk on this? And after those questions are answered, should the project proceed? We think any large investment should undergo that kind of analysis, and we ask that you do that on the feasibility question. I have more to say, but I don't have time. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And thank you very much. And you know, we have one more speaker card on the same topic, but at the end, maybe you can let us know what's our time horizon on this particular matter. That way everybody is aware of it, since right now this is, you know, public comment. And the last speaker card we have is Mr. Bruce Delgado. I've heard that name before.
Good afternoon, Chair and Board. I'm speaking as a private resident of the city of Marina. I mostly want to thank those people that have taken a lot of effort to prepare for today and to drive down today and to be here today and speak so eloquently. I also wanted to let you know a few things about the city of Marina you might not. It's a relatively small city, about 21,000 people. However, its families speak 52 languages. So it's a highly diverse city. It's been a working class city since its inception. Many of the residents are either farm workers or they work in hotels, restaurants, not able to be here today for obvious reasons. So those that did come, I sincerely appreciate your effort. You may or may not know that Marina is the location for the region's current sewage treatment plant, the region's landfill, the regional sand extraction coastal plant called CEMEX, which due to recent negotiations that the city fought hard to conclude are now going to close that plant down by 2020 with the expectation that it would be turned over to reclamation, coastal restoration, public access, environmental education. But now the proposal instead is to land another industrial facility within Marina called the desal slant wells, whereby the city of Marina, as you may have heard, would not receive a drop of the water from those slant wells or the related desal plant connected to those slant wells. But instead, that project is meant to serve 100% the much more affluent community to our south, including Carmel, Pebble Beach, Monterey, Carmel Valley, et cetera, Pacific Grove. So to me, it seems a classic example of environmental injustice that we've heard for decades around the world repeat this pattern. Lastly, I'll just say that part of my thanks to these people that have spoken before me is because they believe in protecting our Monterey Bay coastal ecosystem health. They believe in protecting our groundwater quality, and they believe in environmental justice.
Thank you, Mr. Delgado. And before Mr. Robertson provides a little bit of a time horizon on this issue, I think on behalf of my colleagues here, I want to thank all of you for coming Thursday afternoon to this meeting. I'm sure you had, if you had choices, there would have been other activities aside of coming here and waiting half a day to be able to speak. So I want to personally, on behalf of my colleague, thank you very much. I see Mr. Johnson wanted to make a comment.
I do. I have to say I've been on this board for 7 years now, and I've heard a lot of presentations, a lot of professional presentations. I am struck by how eloquent your presentation was, and I know very well, having driven down last night, what it takes to get down here. So I do want to thank you for that. These questions are going to come before us, and it's not quite clear what pieces we get to access in terms of deciding them. But I just want to thank you for coming. I have not seen a public comment presentation like this in my entire time on the board. So thank you.
So, Mr. Robertson, if you could give us a little
sure. Let me speak to a couple of things there. First, I want to say thank you. Thank you for participating. To those who participated, call attention to the board's attention to a supplemental that was provided to you. What we did in out of respect for trees is we just copied one of the letter, but we received letters from every name here, and there's approximately 40 something names. You don't have to count, but the names are on the supplemental sheet that's in front of you, out of respect for the people who emailed the letters to myself and Mr. Keeling. So I wanted to call that to your attention. I also wanted to let you know that Harvey Packard and I have met with Keith Vandermonten, who is the Marina Coast Water District General Manager, on a couple different occasions with respect to many of the issues raised here today. And he raised our awareness. And on some of the issues that were expressed today, we don't have authority over. On some of them, we do have some authority over. And Harvey and I have talked about, we plan to look into those. We've also had a conversation with the State Water Board about how to staff that, how to create capacity in our organization to staff that work that we anticipate here. So I wanted to provide some assurance. You asked me for a sense of timing. I'm not prepared to give you that yet. But what we can do is we can circle back with an executive officer's update, executive officer's report update on this issue.
2019?
Yeah. Oh, with respect to both the work and the update, yeah.
Okay.
2019.
I have a question for council.
Let Jeff first.
Yeah. So when is this going to come back to, when is it going to come to us? It hasn't come to us yet as a agenda item for board action.
You want to?
So what the board would be deciding on is a determination under what's known as Water Code Section 13142.5, which is for each new and expanded coastal power plant using seawater for cooling, heating, or industrial processing, the board would need to make a determination that the best available site, design, technology, and mitigation measures feasible shall be used to minimize the intake and mortality of all forms of marine life. So that's the determination that the board would make. Frequently, that is done within or as part of an NPDES permit. I'm not sure if staff has determined how it'll appear for this particular project quite yet.
That's the entrainment issue?
It's more of a siting issue, I think, and that the technology that's being used is the feasible one.
For the intake?
Yes.
Okay.
And the outflow.
Yeah.
And the outflow. Okay. So, and is it going to come back after that again? I mean, are there multiple bites at this, or is that the only thing we're going to be doing?
I'd like to help clarify, excuse me. When we're not talking about a power plant, we're talking about a desalinization plant.
Right, but I listened to the text of statute, and I'm trying to make sense of it.
The other is that we're not talking about an open ocean intake. We're talking about subsurface slant wells
Correct.
That are on the coast, and they'll be drawing a mixture of brackish water from beneath the surface. We're not specifically, I don't think we really have any permitting authority over the desal plant and the slant wells themselves. We do have authority over whether or not those slant wells cause water quality problems. And that was what John was referencing. We will be looking at those slant wells with respect to their potential to degrade water quality. Where we will see a permitting action, which will be similar to the one that we're going to see today for Monterey One Water and the MPDS permit update, is in the future, if and when that desal plant is operational, the brine will be going to Monterey One for disposal, and that permit will need to be revised to include that additional brine waste discharge.
Okay.
So under that existing permit.
Before we go further, and also, I just want to caution us that this is a public comment period, and we should not go too far in the weeds of question and answer, because it would not be fair for all parties who may be impacted or stakeholders to be able to speak. So I think we need to limit our conversation on this. You know, you're the counsel, so you tell me, but it's public comment, so I think we need to be cautious.
You know, we're just trying to get educated. I mean, my questions are geared towards that. You know, it has never come before us, and I'm trying to get a handle. The folks that were here, and I'm very grateful that they came to start to educate us, they've raised a lot of issues. But I would like to also have us help them know what our authority is, because there are certain things we can look at, and there are other things that have been raised that we're not going to be able to do anything with. So, you know, it's going to help them also to be able to focus down what they want to tell us when the time comes for us to actually do something. So that's what my question is really geared towards, that statute. And maybe you want to just, Stephanie, read it again to me, because I'll look at it later. Water code what?
It's water code section 13142.5.
Okay.
Subsection B.
Okay. All right.
And there's an entire section on this in the ocean plan as well that kind of goes more into the weeds.
Okay. So, Mr. Johnson.
Just briefly, full disclosure, in previous employment as a full-time union rep at Teamsters Local 890 in Salinas, I represented a group of Marina Coast Water District employees, management and confidential employees, negotiated their contract. I have not had anything to do with that for over 15 years, and while I still do occasional consulting work for Teamsters Local 890, and they still represent Marina Coast, I have not worked as a full-time employee of theirs for over 15 years. So I don't think it really creates a conflict for me. But I just want to put that out there to avoid the appearance. Secondly, a question was raised about the ability, ex parte rules, and the ability of stakeholders to talk to board members. Correct me if I'm wrong, counsel, but I believe that this is not currently a pending or impending matter before us, so there is not a bar on individuals or anybody else talking to board members about this. Is that correct?
That's correct with respect to this particular board.
All right. And Stephanie?
I'm somewhat familiar with the project in Felton, California, up in by Boulder Creek and Ben Lomond. And Santa Cruz Community Television has a tape that you might be able to get a hold of or buy a copy of their early organizing efforts against Cal-Am. It's very interesting. People sitting around a living room saying, we want to buy the water company. How can we do that? How much is it going to cost? And after they were successful, I know their rates did take a big hike, but they felt so good because they could elect their own board members and have control of their water. So you could call community television and see if it's quite an old tape, but it's very instructive and it'll give you some support and energy.
Dr. Hunter?
Thank you all. And I have been aware of this process for over the decade and or more that I've had the privilege of working in the Central Coast region, especially concerning the water issues in the Monterey Bay area. But I just want to reiterate what Mr. Young was, his perspective and his questions regarding our actual authority. We have no authority over water rights. That is completely beyond our jurisdiction, and it really falls to the State Water Board. So if some of those decisions that have already been made or are pending under State Water Board are going against what you believe to be your interests and your water rights, your challenge is to appeal and work with the State Water Board. And I know that we in this region can help to inform you, help to provide information about what your access is, and even possibly provide contact information for specific staff at State Water Board. I'm sure, knowing Mr. Riley and your history in protecting local water rights, that you probably have had many, many conversations with these folks. But I think it needs to be really clarified that we have very limited authority over this. And by the time we actually look at this, this project probably is pretty much a done deal. So while it's important for us to realize what is happening there, so your trip here is not in vain. Bringing it to our attention helps us to give staff the options or give them clear direction that we are hearing what you're saying. We realize the urgency of the situation, and the timing is important. And if we aren't going to see this project and whatever sliver of authority we have over the project once it's underway, it will be after the fact, after all of the things that you've raised today have already been decided. And that's what I think, that's what I believe is facing us. So I think it's important for us to be really clear and letting you know we hear what you're saying, but what we can actually do about it is very, very little. But I think staff and Mr. Robertson, please clarify, what can staff do to help direct and inform them on their options and access to appeal and so forth?
Okay, so I was going to follow on your comment, so thank you for leading into that. We're a water quality agency. Our access into this, as both I and Mr. Keeling alluded to, is the effect of the slant wells on water quality. That's what Mr. Vander Motten brought to our attention, was there's reference made to a Stanford study. I think it was a 2017 Stanford study we're aware of, and evaluating the impact of the slant wells on the Marina Coast Water District's water supply. And that's a water quality-based question that we can look into and address. With respect to providing contacts, then the other part of your statement, we welcome those questions, and we'll help them out there. Mm-hmm. So, and then I'm going to say, and we will circle back with responses to the water quality issues with a supplemental executive officer's report later. I guess that's next year.
Mm-hmm. All right, but you know, in concluding this particular set of public comments, definitely use us as your resource, because that has been another discussion we had at one of our chair's calls, is sometimes people come to us and think we have the authority and we don't, but it doesn't stop there. You know, use us as your network for contacts. You know, the State Water Board is an agency of 1,200 people as a whole. So, you know, we're a very large organization, and I know it can be confusing. Say, well, you're for water board. Yeah, but we're water quality. We're not water rights. So absolutely, do not be discouraged and say, gee, we came for none. You know, we'll provide you contacts that will help you navigate through the system. So thank you again for coming today. I have one more speaker card on a different topic, which is Mr. Greg Burge. And you had requested originally 10 minutes, but you know, usually 3 minutes is what we allow. However, I have agreed to give you 5 minutes.
Chairman, well, thank you for that 5 minutes. I know I'd asked for 10, and I appreciate your courtesy.
You're welcome.
I'm speaking again. First time I've ever addressed the...
Could you state your name, please?
First time. My name is Greg Burge. I'm from Murrieta, California. First time I've ever spoke to this board. I've spoke to the Santa Ana Regional Board, San Diego Regional Board, as well as Coastal Commission in regards to this topic. And this has been a labor of love for me for about 30 years. The issue that I'm bringing before you today, which is extremely controversial, it's been ongoing in the County of San Luis Obispo, is the water wars in Cambria. And in effect, what I'm talking about today is specifically sewer. I bought my property in 1989, and we had assessments paid on my property under assessment districts number two until 2001. 26 years of assessments paying for a sewer treatment plant that was mandated under your basin plan issued by a health emergency back in 1969 and under your amendments. Cambria complied and built a sewer treatment plant. Coastal Commission permitted it, issued their requirements under 30412, issuing the four requirements before the bonds were sublet under the approved assessment districts. And for purposes, most people don't understand 35 years of history. I have the database going back to 69. The issue that's going to come back to haunt this board, and we're bringing it to your board now, is the fact that in order for the State Water Resources Control Board to issue the original federal grant, and that federal grant was the first one issued under the Clean Water Act. I don't know if people know that, under their Title II. It was under a Schedule A system under a health emergency. That plant was built with a federal grant. Assessment districts were funded through the local assessments, which was the local share and is a contract between the federal government, the landowners, and was administered by the State Water Resources Control Board, and that authority is still there. Under the original bonds, there was a condition issued by EPA which required that all existing homes in Cambria were to be connected to sewer that were under septic system at the time, and then they issued condition 42810, which is that there could be no more than 125 connections in any calendar year. Over the course of the years, and this is that's why I asked for 10 minutes, because this is not something that you can speak in 2 minutes or three. Under the original bond agreements and the conditions that EPA put in place, the bottom line at that time was that they didn't want to oversubscribe the sewer treatment plant, so they put the condition of 125 a year in place. And that is still in force and effect under the existing operational permit from the Coastal Commission on that plant. Now, I've been trying to get my guaranteed right to connect to sewer that was offered under the assessment districts. Now, Mr. Wolf, you mentioned something to me that was quite interesting, that you don't like to play word games and that words mean things, okay? Under the bond proceedings, we were not only entitled to connect to sewer, we were eligible for sewer, and that is a protected property right based upon the exaction issued under the special assessments. I keep asking why I can't connect to sewer, and I've been asking this question to this board, the county, and the state board through Mr. Loeffler for now almost 21 years with no response. Mr. Packard says, oh yeah, sewer is existing. Well, no, we know it's existing. Why can't I connect? The answer is very simple. County, under no authority, in 1990, issued their growth management ordinance. And in that, they issued an edict that said that that they had to close the water list. The water list is EPA condition 42810. The list was created in 1985 due to the oversubscribing in that calendar year of over 125. In order to solve the problem, they created a list. That list is to this day closed. I've not been able to access my sewer benefit for 28 years. Now, in order to break this, we have to come and go to OWTS amendments. That was a gift. The May 2012 amendments opened this issue to you and the liability that goes with it. I broke the Quail Valley prohibition in 4 months utilizing the amendments. I was the only one ever to do it. Mr. Loeffler is more than aware of it. It took me 4 months. Yesterday, I went to the CSD and asked and submitted applications for sewer to start my 4-month process. These are stamped and approved receipt. Along with that, and I asked for one more minute, along with that is a request to the board to hear the why, after 8 separate requests from our attorneys, that the CSD general manager would not answer what is going to come to you, this board, and that is, in order for you to act under your OWTS amendments, the CSD has to explain and prove to you that sewer is unavailable to our properties. Absent of that, you're constrained and locked in order to be able to act on your application. I'll be here in 4 months. You keep asking time frames. I will guarantee you it will be here in 4 months. And I'm going to take Cambria the same way we did Quail Valley, and along, just as to make sure that you understand the gravity of the situation, I'm going to blow up Los Osos also.
Okay. Thank you for your comment. So this ends our public comment period.